Good morning. So I went to Togo, West Africa, and for those of you who don't know me, if you're new to the church, I'm a family doc and I deliver babies as well. And so I've gone to this hospital and clinic for about 35 years now. It's been in existence for about 42, I think it was, so the first time I went. Susan was pregnant with our daughter Rachel, and I went for 6 weeks. There was a coup there. There was no communication. She didn't know what was going on. But this verse is very important to what Will and Stephanie have shared, because they are especially about making disciples, and where I go as well. Medicine can go places that, when you're a medical provider, you can go places that a lot of times other people can't go because they desire the medical help. And so we get to places. So this hospital is in the southern part of Togo, and there's a sister hospital in the northern part that's right in the Muslim area of that country. But it says, Jesus says in Matthew 28:19-20, after he's resurrected and tells his disciples, "Go therefore and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to follow all that I have commanded you. And behold, I am with you always to the end of the age." And as Will had shared, you know, it is in those tough times, those difficult times, that you see that Jesus is the one who's going before us. There are just so many stories that we could tell, I'm sure they could tell as well, that how Jesus opens the doors, makes a way, makes a path for us. So Togo is right here. Nigeria, where all the persecution is going on, is right here. Benin, then Togo, and then Ghana is right next door. Burkina Faso is the country above, where there's a lot of terrorism going on there. And so some of those folks come down and hit the northern part of Togo here, and impact the northern hospital, which I hope to go to in the future. God set up another chance meeting in the airport. There's all these people there, and who sits next to me is the woman who is one of the directors at the northern hospital. So this is the capital city of Togo, and it's an impoverished nation. The people are very hard workers. And you can see that they try to make the most of every ounce of gas that they have. This is how they transport a lot of things. They have motorcycles. I saw someone carrying a big screen TV on the back of a motorcycle, mattress on the back of a motorcycle, rolled up. I've seen five people, a husband and wife and three of their kids on a motorcycle like this, piled on the motorcycle. This is one of the open air markets. Now, this is not in the capital. This is in the area where I go, which is about 3 hours north of the capital city. The main religions there there's animism, and animism is becoming less important as Christianity makes inroads. When I was there 34 years ago, excuse me, animism was very ingrained in the folks. And all of the witch doctors had a lot of power. They would cut the kids who had big livers. Many of the kids had large livers at that time, and they still do. And they would cut them and then rub manure, as Dennis talked about manure. They would rub manure in that to take away the evil spirits. So of course, a lot of the kids would get tetanus and so on. But now it's Christianity, animism, some, and then the Muslim religion is coming down from the north and impacting this area even more significantly. This is the terrain, a lot like actually Garrett County. The mountains are a little bit higher, jungle, and in this time of the year, it's very arid. It's a beautiful, beautiful country. Things grow really well there. This is actually a village church. This is not a church like would be in some of the larger towns, which I go to. I did not get to go to this church. And this is one of their schools. The kids are required to go to school, but unfortunately, you have to wear a uniform to go to school, and many of the parents can't afford the uniform. So I don't know what the percentage is, but not all of the kids get to go to school. The Christian community there is trying to help that to change, and they are impacting the community there, trying to develop Christian schools where they pay then for the kids to have uniforms and so on. They teach them in the Word. So this is one of the churches there. This is in Adeta, which is the town right next to the hospital and clinic. And as you can see, it looks beautiful there at the front. What they do is they put this beautiful cloth at the front walls. This is all cinder block. And the kids all, as you can see, they're all carried this way. And they stay through the whole service like this. There's another child up here like that. As well, the services, the music is incredible. I couldn't get the videos to play, so I just love the African music, though. They sometimes sing hymns like we sing, but most of it is African music, and it's wonderful. They have lots of bugs, and these are some beetles that fly around. They'll run into you just because they're so haphazard and so on. Cacala or cocoa, we gringos, as Will would say. This is cocoa or cacao, and this is ripe cocoa. So you're walking along, and you can open these up, and of course they have the cocoa beans and so on. The kids are very involved with raising up even their siblings. Before I took, I stopped this little girl and her mom and her brother. I stopped them to take a picture. She was carrying, this is full of water, all right? This basin is full of water at the top, and she had her little brother on her hip, and she was trucking along there, and when I went to take the picture, she put him down to take the picture. So it missed the point, but this is how they, and at a very young age, this is how they carry their water and other things is on their head. So of course that gives them lots of neck arthritis as they get older and lots of issues with that. But the kids are super hard workers there. And in the churches, they're super active in singing and things like that, even in giving when they bring the offering up. They are the ones many times that bring the offering up. This is the clinic area This is actually the hospital has to be on a compound there. It has to be protected, especially at night, because of some of the acts of violence and so on. So this is the path to the hospital. There's where we would sometimes have meeting times here because it's shaded. During the time I went, it's usually in the 90s, but during the hot season, which is now, it would be up to 100, 110. In the northern part, it's up into the 120. Range. So we would have our meetings here. The guest house is back here where we would stay. And I'll tell you a story of having to run from the guest house to the clinic one time. So as you can see here, this is a very long snake. They were clearing, this area is just past that dirt path that I showed you. They were clearing this because they're going to try to have solar there because the electricity is so uneven at this time. They have generator backups, but it causes injury to a lot of the different mechanics and so on, the mechanical machines that they have in the hospital. So while they're clearing this is a black mamba, one of the most poisonous snakes in the world. And so actually when I went to Africa the first time, they told us you cannot go at night without your torch or your flashlight. And at that time they didn't have phones or anything like that, so I got this crashing knock on the door. Doctor, we need you at the clinic. A woman was hemorrhaging. So I just put on my scrubs and ran. And it was a little dirt path. I didn't go along that road, unfortunately. I ran to the hospital without my torch. The kind of like the disciples going to the tomb. I outran the guard, unfortunately, because he had his lantern, as he should have had. And I ran, got there, and took care of the situation. And I come back out to the nurse's station, and he's holding a snake, a black mamba. It wasn't quite as big as this. And he starts pretty strongly reprimanding me that I did not have my torch. And he says, Doctor, he said, and someone was translating, one of the nurses was translating for him. He said, I cut the head off of this snake just after you jumped over it running to the hospital. It was laying right across the path. I jumped over it. Clearly, I think it would have hit me. We did not have anti-venom at that time. But God protected me, allowed me to jump over the snake. And so I didn't go out at night without my torch after that. That taught me well. So especially this trip, I always had my flashlight with me. So that was a good lesson. This is the pharmacy there. So the pharmacy is used for outpatients, of course, and then patients who we see in the hospital and take care of them. And then when they're discharged, they would go there. Sometimes at night I would come out from the hospital, and there'd be people laying even all the way here, waiting till the next morning so that they could receive either their medicine or the care at the clinics. But this was usually packed all day. This is a little dull, but this is part of the clinic, and people wait. They come in the morning, and they wait all day. If they come earlier, they're on the list ahead, and usually now we're able to see most of the patients throughout the day. And I would help see patients through the day. They also had nurses and physician's assistants. Most of those folks were Africans that had been trained. So that's the clinic. The trees are incredible here. Andrew would like some of these trees to do some of his bowls, but pretty incredible. This is part of the clinic as well. This is where I spent a lot of my time, in this little clinic room that was very hot. Of course, they don't have air conditioner or anything, but you're in this little room that's like 8x8. So this is Gaglo. Gaglo was my translator 34 years ago when I first got there. He's about my age, so we were young bucks at that time. But he was my translator. He had actually been a bricklayer before he became a translator. And he knew 5 languages at that point. And I said to him toward the end of my time there, I was there for 6 weeks at that time, and he said, "Gaglo, you need to do what I'm doing. You could do what I'm doing." And he was actually pastoring at that time. He was doing his masonry work a little bit, but mostly he was pastoring and doing translating work. And I said, "You could easily do this." And he said, no, I can't do that. You're the doctor. And I said, "No, you could." And I went to the head of the hospital there. I said, "Hey, you need to train Gaglo to do this." So after I left, they trained him to become a physician's assistant. So for 34 years now, he has done that work. So it was pretty neat to be able to work with him. This time when I went back, it was just really neat. I was able to go to his church, speak at his church too. He has prostate cancer now, but he's actually doing well with it, but he doesn't have the energy in the middle of treatment that he had before. But it was neat to be able to go back back there. He just loves the Lord. His son actually runs the guest house and runs a lot of the things going on there. So the other thing that they do there is they train Christian surgeons. And these are two of the surgeons I was able to help teach some medicine to, because much to people's surprise, some of the surgeons need to know medicine as well, some. So I was able to help teach them. They're wonderful young men. And these are some of the nurses that actually see patients as well, who I worked with through the day. And when you go there, one of the jobs you have is to also help to train them in that. I was also able to do some teaching through some scripture with them as well. And they have a time in the morning where we get together to do that. This is the nurse's station. We have, it's wonderful. We have all paper charts there, of course. No computers for doing medical records. Wonderful. Now the labs and things like that actually come on a computer, but it comes through paper. So it's so wonderful. So I was there for 4 weeks, but it was really great to go back to paper. So these are some of the nurses, as you can see. The nurses are mostly from Togo. Some are from Benin next door and from Ghana as well. And they'll come there and they'll stay for 5 days and then go back home for a couple days and back and forth. But as believers, they love to be able to do medicine and share the gospel at the same time. That's why they don't work many times back in their own country. This is another one of the surgeons who was training with us, and one of the nurses there at the nurse's station. This is one of the OB nurses, and then I was able to help train woman here who's a nurse practitioner in doing some of the OB type of things and GYN type things. because when I was leaving, she was staying. So for a short time. She's a short-termer as well. And this is the little room that we used for our clinic space. There was enough space for a chair for the patient and for us, and then the table. And so, and they didn't keep the windows open because of, you know, privacy type things. So it got quite warm in there. This is our children's ward. And a lot of the patients in the third world are children. Malaria affects them a great deal. Their nutrition is not as good as, of course, here. And everyone gets visited. Everyone in the hospital and the clinic gets visited and spoken to by a chaplain. Probably 20-25% of the folks are Muslim that come into the hospital, and they all get the gospel. Sometimes, like in this area, one time, there was like six parents sitting around, and the gentleman was sharing the gospel with them, and they were like drilled in on him for like 30 minutes. Because I asked him, I said, I think they're, because I was able to share with him a little bit, and I said, I think they're ready to hear more of the gospel. And so he came in, and man, he just, they are serious about sharing the gospel. And then coming alongside them and getting them into churches to disciple them, because as we read, Jesus said, make disciples. And so the parents will lay on this is, of course, concrete floor. They will lay on these mats all night long. So when you make night rounds, you have to step over the parents who are laying all over the floor here. The kids that come in there are with malaria and so on, what we call cerebral malaria, sicker than I've seen here in the States in terms of with the way their blood counts are. You would never think they should be alive again, alive still when they come in as sick as they are. Many of them seizing, having seizures, being unresponsive, and God brings a lot of them through. So this is still part of the children's ward. They don't have rooms there for their hospitals. They're divided by curtains. So even though I said the clinics, they do close the windows. Here, everything is wide open. So when you talk to the patients, you talk to their families, everyone next door and so on can hear. But this is the women. The women and men are split. This is an area of, this is our emergency room and post-anesthesia. So after they have surgery, they come to this area. Or if they're seriously ill when they first come in, they stay here and we take care of them there. And you can see, actually, we now have some monitors, and we have an area that has a few beds that we consider the ICU, and we have monitors as well. Again, the chaplains are seeing all of these folks every day, and they keep kind of a card that tells you where they are in the gospel presentation and where they are in terms of their walk with Christ. This is a baby I got to deliver, and as you can see, they love color, and when they dress up the little ones, even when they're just leaving the hospital, they're usually in bright, colorful clothes. This, you look at this and you say, wow, you can see that things are taped. This is an isolette. Over here, we have a lamp here trying to cause the temperature to stay up high enough here, because the warmer was not working on this isolette, this part here. This is taped closed, and you can see, so this is what we had to work with. Actually, when I was there last year, we pulled this, we needed this for a premature baby, and it hadn't been used in years. So I got this out and started working with it and showed them how some of these things work. This is the other isolette we had for a preemie. This is a 35-week baby. But thanks to, we were able to get money from a local church now here, and we have bought two brand new isolettes that also treat hyperbilirubinemia, jaundice of babies that can cause brain damage, which we were not able to do well before. We had a baby there when I was there who had just extremely high bilirubin levels, and we weren't able to bring it down quickly enough, and that causes brain damage, which likely that baby will have. Now we have those isolettes. They should be there now. So we have two of them we were able to purchase. So a great answer to prayer, and God's hand, as you say, then is spreading out the manure, so to speak. So this is another baby I was able to deliver. When I was there, delivered, I think it was 9 babies, and then we only had 1 C-section. The C-section rate there is one of the highest in the world because malaria affects the placenta so severely that a lot of the moms, either come in with a dead baby, and you see that a fair amount. It's the highest rate of what we call baby death in utero or fetal death in utero, highest place in the world because of malaria there. And it makes it very difficult to deliver babies naturally because the baby's heartbeats do not tolerate it because the placenta has been so calcified by the malaria if they get malaria when they're pregnant. So this woman, she actually had an awful heartbeat tracing. We were able to deliver the baby, and then she started to hemorrhage. We gave her some of the medicines, and actually they did have a number of the medicines we use here in the States. We started what we call... I was able to introduce to them this what we call high-dose Pitocin protocol. We gave her, and she was still hemorrhaging. As you can see, she's Muslim. But I said, we need to stop and pray. And so I prayed, the nurse interpreted so that she could understand, and within about a minute and a half, her bleeding stopped, just stopped. So it was like a miracle. And so at the time of discharge, I reminded her and had the nurse tell her that we gave her all these medicines to stop her hemorrhaging, but it was the prayer to Jesus that saved her life through this ordeal. This little baby, so these are twins, surprisingly, big difference. This little baby had a severe respiratory infection, pneumonia, and this is where the day he's going home. And so mom, as you can see, is pretty happy. She would stay in that chair all night, sitting in that chair. That's why she looks a little bit bedraggled. She just had been there for days. This little baby had, I just love this picture because of the smile. This little smirk there. You think you're all that? Well, I got it all together. So this is another baby I got to deliver. This child, this little girl, she had been in the hospital 5 days earlier. She had a blood count of a hemoglobin of 2.5. So normal kids have a hemoglobin of around 12, right? Her hemoglobin was 2.5. Right, she shouldn't be able to live with a hemoglobin of that. She was seizing, she was unresponsive, and here she is 5 days later, looking like this. And you know, people prayed over her. The miracles that happened there, and we many times in America, many times when miracles happen, we don't see them because we think it's modern medicine. Medicine doesn't work unless God allows it and he causes the human body to respond to the things that we do. So here she was. Now, she wasn't happy, as you can see, about being here, but her grandma was happy that she made it. This is a young lady. This little girl, she's about 9 years old. She actually was there she's in the OB unit with her one of their siblings who was just born. But she was limping in, and you can see her left arm has palsy. She's paralyzed in her left arm. This was the first time, and you can see she's drawing here. This is the first time at 9 years old that she had ever held a pencil or a pen. Susan had this chance time, all these chance things that God sets up, that she said, hey, take this pack of colored pens. You probably will need these. Some kid will want these. Well, this little girl, it was just... Just to be able to draw in color here, this is, I think, a green one. So we gave her this pack. We had to give her paper as well because clearly she didn't have paper at home. This is the first time she had held, and you can see she doesn't know how to hold the pen. I'm trying to instruct her how to hold it, but I needed some of the teachers here to instruct her how to hold it. But so it was just neat how we could bless her with something that we consider small, but in her mind was incredible. The other thing that Christianity has brought to this region is how the people treat children and how they treat women. It has totally, totally transformed this area. And Goglo has told me because of the fact that He was raised there, and he says, women and children are held in high esteem now because of what Christianity has done in that area. This is one of my buddies there who was really sick when he came in. This is before he was going to go as well. This is a woman who was, and a lot of the women have continued to childbear until an older age. She was in her 40s, which is pretty significant in that area. And you can see the baby's on oxygen and had a feeding tube, but was doing quite well. And those babies are the ones that would not make it if it wasn't for this hospital here. So this is the last slide that I want to, and so Andrew, if we can turn that off there.